Verulam Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Hello again and welcome to Verulam Sport Podcasting. And I tell you what, the Premier League is back and you know and you love it. And it is a massive dogfight for Watford. They got a battling point against Leicester, but a defeat against Sean Dyche, of course, an ex-Watford manager, Burnley's Sean Dyche's team got a victory. So it's only, I think, 6 points from the last nine matches for Watford, but they are above the relegation zone. It's going to be exciting end to this finish of this season. And always to join us to tell us more, it's Head of Communications from Watford Football Club, Richard Walker. Richard, how are you?
I'm all right, Tony. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Always grateful for your time and company and your insights into the mighty Hornets. So much to discuss again in this contracted sprint to the finish of this season. But just real quickly, obviously this week sees Liverpool claim the Premier League title, the first Premier League title, the first championship domestically in a league since 1991. Some of the listeners weren't even born then, Richard. And obviously we know, don't we? We've spoken about it loads. We've eulogised about that wonderful Watford victory over champions now Liverpool. But overall, just briefly, your summation of Klopp's men and their potential future, their potential dynasty, one wonders.
I don't know about their dynasty. I'm yet to be convinced that they'll necessarily have things all their own way next season, but it's certainly been an amazing season for them. As so often, I think, with championship races, you can look back to defining moments or periods of time. I know everyone points back to the Leicester season because the other teams were largely in transition that year. And I think there's reasons that you can look at and say Liverpool have been the most consistent. They've got the best squad depth. Chelsea were hampered by not being able to sign players. Manchester City have just stuttered and not been quite as convincing as they have been in the past. And Liverpool have just had an awesome consistency about them. And the way they play, the way they approach every game, it's they suffocate you. That's what they look to do. They try and suffocate you completely so you can't get out of your own half and you can't move up the field. You certainly never see Liverpool under pressure for any real length of time. When they do let other teams have possession, which is very rare, they're normally sort of controlling where that is on the pitch. So all credit to them. All I'm looking for now, Tony, is they go unbeaten. And so Watford can be the only team they lost to in that season. That would be quite something to say in years to come.
Absolutely. I tell you what, it was a comprehensive win, wasn't it? 3-0 on the day. And I thought Sarr was an absolute star. And again, nobody can deny that. And as you say, it's distinctly possible as we maraud to the finish. But right now, let's focus in on Watford. As we know, such a contracted end to the season. It's already been super busy. I want to go back to that dramatic last 3 minutes against Leicester City. 1-1 it finished. And I tell you what, I know we were talking, we almost at this moment can disregard form. But if you care to look into it, we shouldn't be shocked about late drama between the Hornets and the Foxes. I think six of the last seven games, they've seen a late goal or a red card in the final dying embers of the match. I guess, though, all at Watford must have thought it was all said and done when Chiswell fired in with a matter of moments to go. But goodness me, Mr. Dawson was having none of that, was he?
No, it was a great finish, wasn't it? And it's funny, it leaves you feeling, if you were to score first on the 90th minute and someone equalised in injury time, you'd leave the game feeling a hell of a lot different to having a goal going against you and then equalising into injury time. So you leave the game with a massively different feeling, from a huge negative to a huge positive, in fact. I thought both teams were worthy of a point. I thought when you look at the possession's a bit of a misnomer. It's people who like stats talk about how much possession, but you got to be doing stuff with it. Liverpool have a lot of possession, but they create chances. They go forward and deliberately create chances. So you got to look at the good chances created by both sides in the game. And I felt there was probably four or five per person, per team, excuse me.
No, I totally agree with you there. And I tell you what, as we know, it is a dogfight, but that point could well be in the final analysis so crucial. Watford currently on 28 points, West Ham just below them on 27, Bournemouth 27. Both those outfits play on July the 1st. Villa, of course, lost this weekend, remaining on 27 points. Just 1 point between those four teams. Quite simply, two out of four doesn't belong, does it? It's going to be a real, real dogfight right to the end of the season, I think, here.
Yeah, I think if you discount Norwich on the basis that they've got too much to do, I think you have to discount Norwich. If you keep Norwich in it, then you're having a totally different conversation. I think if you discount Norwich and say that there's really two sides from the next five, I don't think Brighton are out of trouble yet by any means. They've had two good results to start with, but Let's have it right. They do struggle to win games. I don't think Southampton on 37 are going to trouble the judges here. But Brighton, although they're on 33, there's no reason they couldn't. There's no reason they might not go winless for four or five games. So let's look at it logically. When we spoke coming into this period, we talked about we felt Watford would probably need 10 points. Mm-hmm. So where they started, that would put them on 37. If you give Watford those points, because otherwise you're saying they're likely to go down, then if you say Watford are going to be on 37, then there's three clubs on 27, all of whom have now got to win four out of their last matches, two of whom have got to win four out of their last matches to go past Watford. Is that going to happen? I don't think so.
I think you're making some really good points there. Just circling back quickly to the classy Dawson finish, and it was a bona fide worldie. His first Premier League goal in 31 outings, his debut goal for the Hornets, not a bad way to do it. I was hearing that he tends to say, at least, that he does this in training. Is he auditioning for a place up front alongside Mr. Deeney?
No, but I think the point he was making is that he has got quite a good goal-scoring record for a defender. And he has, to be fair to him. He used to pop up with his fair share at West Brom. So he's not a defender who very, very rarely scores goals. You know, I think he scored, you know, 14, 15 odd goals for West Brom in the best part of 200 games. So it wasn't like he's totally foreign to the idea of scoring. So. And I know he got more when he was at Rochdale, his first club. I think that's one of the reasons that caught the eye, actually, 9 or 10 years ago when West Brom signed him. The fact that I think he was scoring at a rate of almost one in five games at Rochdale. So he does practice scoring from set pieces. I'm not sure I'm convinced about the argument of him practicing overhead kicks and scissor kicks, but being around the area where the ball's going to land. He's a good timer of a jump and certainly showed his athleticism with that finish, didn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, a bona fide worldie. But I must say, it was a world-class performance in him in his real position at the back. Herculean. And I thought likewise against Burnley. But coming back now to that Burnley fixture, the game is, as you know, coming thick and fast on Thursday. Burnley, of course, do have a really strong record against Watford. 5 wins in 8 now. Again, a narrow defeat. Rodriguez at the 74th minute. Nice, cute header. But there were chances, weren't there, for Watford? I think Deeney had a ball cleared off the line. Looked like Welbeck had a real chance. Again, we talk about form, and I think you broke it down brilliantly, but it is important, as we say, only six points from 9 from Watford now isn't necessarily survival form. So what was your appraisal of that defeat up at Turf Moor?
Well, it was really warm. When we got to the ground, it was 30 degrees. It was 27 degrees pitch side at kickoff. And that I think that plays a part in these sluggish first halves when not a lot happens. But you couldn't level that of this game because Burnley should have been out of sight by half time. We were really slow out of the blocks and there was some poor first half performances. Second half, couple of changes and a different side completely. And the old adage is you can't deserve to win if you score naught applies here, because we had chances. The Deeney header cleared off the line. Welbeck may have took his shot a little earlier, got tackled. Will Hughes had a good chance, blazed over. Adam Messina had a free header. Loads of other good situations where we should and could have done better. And I think having got beat 5-0 at Man City on the Monday night, if Watford had gone ahead, I'm not sure how much fight would have been in Burnley to get an equaliser. So for me, the way it played out in the evening, it was one of those games where the team that scored first was likely to take it.
Of course, you know Sean Dyche very well. There was talk of speculation. There was pressure on him, of course. We won't open Pandora's box, but for certain things that outside...
I don't mind opening it. I don't mind opening it. His argument is he wants to be the sole arbiter of who signs and who gets contract extensions and who gets released. Well, football doesn't really work like that now. You have sporting directors, you have chairmen, you have CEOs who all play a part in the business of football. So I'm afraid the way he looks at running his club is probably a slightly disaligned now to the way the board would see it. And what they're saying, from what I can make out, is that some of the older players that are running out of contract, Joe Hart, Aaron Lennon, to name a couple, the board don't see them as the future of Burnley. They want younger replacements because these guys haven't really played much. So to extend their contracts it seems a little bit of an odd decision to be pushing so hard for that. But I think it's more a sort of who's in charge standoff, this one. You know, are you going to back me? And he's in an extremely strong position. He's done wonders for the club since he's been there, nearly 8 years. And, you know, he'll have all the backing of the supporters. So the board are in a bit of an invidious position at Burnley. But I can understand what they're saying. They want some younger replacements because the core of that team that's done so well over recent years are all north of 30 now, pretty much. And so that's their argument, that they want to, you know, not necessarily give the team a new identity, but change, you know, push for a younger profile in the squad. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll give him credit. Obviously, they had a European excursion. I think their first for 50-odd years recently. Again, ex-Watford man. But again, let's focus now on Watford against the Saints. Not of St. Albans, but of course, Southampton.
Very good.
We try. There was the interesting one, wasn't there? Obviously, drama we discussed late against Leicester, a bit of a trend. But I tell you what, if you were late to your seat this fixture last year, you'd have missed a treat, wouldn't you? The fastest goal in Premier League history. Shane Long bagged it against the Hornets in 7.69 seconds. Again, I'm sure, inspired by Dawson's Herculean efforts and Foster, of course, a big day for him. We'll talk about that. We'll want to keep it tight early doors and then build, I'm sure, on Sunday.
I remember that game last year. I think it was a midweek match. And just a stunned silence as the ball got played back to Foster. He deliberated one touch too long. In came Long, hit him. And that was that. It was almost eerie. Watford kicked off twice in the space of half a minute.
Blink and you miss it. It just proves
because Watford kicked. Yeah, Watford kicked off, went to the fullback, back into Cathcart. I think he played a difficult ball for Foster, and Long was on the case. I distinctly remember it. But look, we can't keep saying, oh, that's a great result elsewhere, when, you know, Villa just lost again. Wolves have done us three favours now, beating Villa, Bournemouth and West Ham. Other teams can't get points. They're going to win eventually, so we've got to start winning. And when we spoke before lockdown, we looked at these three as they were then April home games, Southampton, Norwich, Newcastle. For me, if those 10 points are going to be accrued in total, then, you know, let's get them done with these three home wins. And then that's our 37 on the board. I feel this. We've got a great opportunity tomorrow to get the first of those against a team that should not have greater motivation than us, being as they are becalmed in mid-table security.
Yeah, it looks likely. They do, though, of course, have a real strong record against the Hornets. I think Watford only one win in 13. But, of course, as we've been saying, Richard, these form books go out of the window in this crazy season this year. One thing I would like to talk to you in particular, though, about this crazy season, again, games coming thick and fast. again, you alluded to the improvements against Burnley when changes were made. I would imagine it's going to be imperative to, for squad rotation. Are you able to give us a little bit of an insight into team news, team fitness ahead of the big one on Sunday?
Yeah, there isn't any fresh injuries. There's some tired legs around. I mean, we were better off with the schedule than Burnley were, really, I suppose. But we travelled Wednesday by train, stayed over, came back Thursday by coach. We normally fly back, so that was a late night getting home. And so the players reported Friday afternoon for training and trained again on Saturday, the day before the game, and then they'll stay overnight at a hotel near to Vicarage Road Stadium for the game on Sunday. There's no fresh injuries. There's no one. We've also got to be mindful that this is the last game at which someone could accrue a two-game ban for 10 yellow cards, and we haven't got anyone in that situation either. So that's good. So really, we're picking from the squad, you know, that that travelled to Burnley last year. There was 22 fellas travelled, and that squad of the 20 that were named and the two extra. So it was. So that's really where we're at. We're in pretty good shape, and it's now who is in a position to give the absolute maximum they possibly can to the cause. We're going to see, you know, we're going to see who's got what it takes from our side to really, you know, to really go that extra little bit of magic, go that extra mile, and take the game away from Southampton. Because, you know, let's have it right. If you've got a team where Southampton are, right, they're in sort of 37 points. They probably think they need one more win, but realistically, they're probably thinking, well, there's no way that five teams are going to all whiz past us.
Yeah.
If we'll forget the first goal, we should go on and win this game.
I think you're dead
take
right.
Take it away from them.
I think you're dead right there. We'll build up to kind of a preview just a second in terms of prediction-wise. I'm feeling the positivity there. We've mentioned Ben Foster, and what a signing he has been. Real star. It could well be a big game for Foster. Could become only the 19th player in Premier League history to play in 100 consecutive matches. And he'd be the oldest should he achieve that on Sunday. Just briefly, your assessment of Foster and his role, not just between the sticks, but as a team man and a leader amongst men.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd say, oh, he's a leader. I think what he is a good example of a professional, whereas others are leaders more vocally. So I think when you're around the training ground, and you know, you hear Troy a lot talking because he's that type of person. But then you've got one or two others that sort of lead by being really professional in what they do. Ben's a chatty sort of leader, but he leads by example of how he looks after himself, how he trains. There's Ben Foster, there's Adrian Mariappa, there's Aurelio Gomez at 39 years old. You know, Tom Cleverley, there's Craig Cathcart. There's a few unsung ones that are leaders in a quieter way. Ben's probably a little chattier than that, but you know, in terms of an ambassador for the club and how he portrays himself and represents the club, well, he's been fantastic for us. And this hundred Premier League games in a row is going to take him back to when he was on loan, I think, 13 years ago, because there's no way he can have made 100 appearances in two seasons back here from West Brom. So this 100 Premier League starts for Watford takes him back to a time when I remember I was working at the club, and he came on loan in the summer of 2005, sent down by Alex Ferguson to join us on a pre-season tour in Denmark. Was really raw. Mm. Used to come out for crosses and miss them and make really brash decisions. But he always looks back on the two seasons he had at Watford on loan in his formative years as being absolutely crucial to his development. And I think he's now a really rounded and mature professional and human being. So good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, again, as we always praise not just Ben Foster, but the whole squad there and everybody you look after there at Watford. So good as an ambassador in the community as well. Really proud, really almost a man of the people. And I think that's a real credit to Ben. And again, everybody there at Watford.
Yeah, he is. He's very aware of what Watford means as a club in terms of those family and community messages. So, you know, He's got the right idea in terms of how he carries himself on and off the pitch, as you say.
Coming back, though, to the game on Sunday, it's a big one in this relegation dogfight. The Saints of Southampton have 13 away goals. That's the second most behind only Man City in the Premier League this campaign. They've not drawn in 2025 wins and one loss. I'm going to go there nevertheless. I think Watford actually have a tremendous defensive record. 7 clean sheets this season. It's actually only beaten by Burnley, who, of course, we've discussed this campaign. I think that's going to continue. I think you're going to shut out the Saints, and I see a goal. I'm going to go a 1-0 Watford win to eight ever closer to survival.
So you feed out all these stats about how Southampton are prolific away from home and, and 22 goals, and then you put them down for a nil.
You're a juice operator.
You're in a juice operator.
These things, they can't ever last forever. You know, they're there to be discriminated.
Right. 3-2 Watford. There you go.
He's going for a classic.
I am, because I'm taking into account what you said. Rather than just cast it asunder as you did.
Richard, you make me smile, and you always do every time we speak. It's an honour and a privilege to speak to you always. As always, from myself personally, the whole team here at Verum Sport Podcasting, best of wishes to the whole team in this big one tomorrow. I look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed. Thank you once again.
Thanks, Tony. No problem at all.